Hey guys, this is Kenan Thompson. I have a problem with you. Yes, you. None of y'all told me that Auto Trader has millions of new and used cars that I can shop from home. I thought we were friends. I put smiles on your face, but I'm not smiling. No one told me that with Auto Trader, a dealer can deliver cars to my home or that I could shop by price on Auto Trader. No one. Consider this friendship that you just learned we had officially over. Finally, it's easy. Auto Trader.
Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially since you're always growing and changing. Therapy is all about deepening that self-awareness, because sometimes you don't know what you really want until you talk things through. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/positive.
Good morning to you. Happy Wednesday. I hope it's a happy Wednesday. A bit of a premonition, if you will. It's going to be a happy Wednesday. If you're a fan of Shohei Ohtani, well, he is all the rage on this Wednesday morning. And I suspect he'll be all the rage many mornings moving forward in the 2023 Major League Baseball season. Of course, the final year of his contract with the Angels, which means there are major questions around him. Now, if he doesn't stay with the Angels, we could end up with more matchups between Shohei and Mike Trout, like we got to end the World Baseball Classic last night. If you missed it, man, electric atmosphere in Miami, 36,000 plus in a one-run game. And for the first time in his career, Shohei coming out of the bullpen in the ninth inning in a save situation. Not since he became a pro baseball player has he closed out a game. So a lot of fun. We're going to go through all the big moments. There are a lot of wasted opportunities for the United States. But because it's an exhibition, you know, harp on the team. It was just fun. It was a lot of fun. And I think the deeper we got into the WBC, the more people really got into it. I'm anxious to see, because last night's game was earlier. Did you notice that a lot of the games that Team USA played, they started at 7 o'clock Pacific time, but 10 o'clock Eastern time, which meant you were missing a good portion of the audience that wouldn't stay awake that late for a baseball game, especially not one in March. But this one started at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific, and it was really an opportunity for people to watch if they hadn't yet to this point. And all of the pomp and circumstance with the flag procession and the national anthems and the intros and the lights and the fireworks and everything else going off there in Miami. And if you missed it beforehand, Shohei Ohtani stood in the locker room. Really nice locker room, nice digs there in Miami. And he delivered this impassioned speech to his teammates. He says, hey, we do admire the Americans, but let's stop admiring him for one day. Let's throw away our admiration and win this championship and think about beating them. And it was just really neat. I enjoyed it. Again, an exhibition. We're not talking about the World Series. And yet the buzz was there. The Americans were into it. We know that Team Japan was desperate to reclaim, to have an opportunity to win, right? To be there in that spotlight again. And I really enjoyed seeing the smiles and the excitement in the stands as well. There were plenty of Team USA jerseys and people who were expressly rooting for the Americans. But I would say there are just as many people, or maybe it was a vocal, who are really enjoying the show put on by Samurai Japan, Team Japan. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. That's where you can find me. And also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So we did just get through Ask Amy Anything. If you didn't hear your question, I always go back over the course of Wednesday. It's likely to be Wednesday afternoon once I sleep. And it's not been a great week and a half for sleeping, but drugs, I'm telling you, drugs on this Wednesday morning. That's the secret. I guess it's not really a secret when I speak it out loud, but so don't tell anyone. So once I wake up on Wednesday afternoon, I promise to answer many of your questions, the ones that I can get to really quickly. But we also have a question for you on our social. I'm claiming Shohei Ohtani as my answer to this question, but I want to know who else, what else are the biggest enigmas in sports, along with Shohei Ohtani. because he really does defy logic. The definition, it's mysterious, hard to understand, confusing. I just think he's amazing and he's unique. And so that's kind of what I come up with when I say enigma. But yes, definitely mysterious, difficult to understand how a man can be as good as he is at both of these skills, both the hitting and the pitching, and the fact that he can do both seamlessly. He can morph from one to the other without really having any trouble. Puzzling is another word that is used to define an enigma. So it's a noun. Who or what are the enigmas in sports along with Shohei Ohtani? Again, it's After Hours CBS on Twitter or on our Facebook page. We got fireworks right off the top in Miami last night.
Lifts his ball down the left field line. It's Trey Turner done it again in the championship. You bet he has. Murakami drives a ball to deep right field and ties the game in the blink of an eye. High drive left center field. Mullins on his horse to the track at the wall. It's gone. Okamoto goes deep and Japan grows its lead.
Listen to that atmosphere. The horns and the noise and the din. As much as I'm a radio junkie, and that call came from TV with Joe Davis on FS1, I could sit, and I did. Well, I was doing yoga part of the time. It was really funny. I had the TV on behind the computer screen, so my yoga instructor didn't realize that I was cheating on her. But I couldn't miss this. And so just watching the atmosphere there in Miami was glorious. But then to hear it behind Joe Davis and that noise, it doesn't sound like March. It sounds like October. Sounds like a World Cup game, for heaven's sakes, but really cool. So, yeah, you have Trey Turner, who homers in five of these WBC games, and then Japan with the answer. And there were multiple opportunities. There was a GIDP by the Americans with one out and two runners on. So a double play wipes out the threat. Kyle Schwarber had, I think it was a pop-up of sorts, a sky-high ball with a couple of runners on, too. Not going to get too uptight over the fact that they didn't take advantage of their chances, but it was a close game, and there did seem to be that tension and that intensity that you wouldn't expect in March.
Into double digits in this at-bat, the 10th pitch. Fly to right field, Kondo turns, there it goes! Straighten it out, second deck, one-run game.
That's Kyle Schwarber. You don't hear his name there, but can I tell you, if you didn't see it, you've got to go back and watch this home run. That ball got out of the stadium in what felt like half a second. As quickly as Tyreek Hill can turn the corner and blast by a defensive back or a linebacker, that's how quickly that Kyle Schwarber blast left the yard. And it was upper decks. It was a screamer or a screecher. Is it screamer or screecher? Screamer?
I think both could apply.
It's an enigma. No, it really wasn't. It makes perfect sense. When Schwarber tattoos a ball, that puppy is gone. And he did. There was a tad bit of posing. I wouldn't say there was a real bat flip or bat chuck or anything like that. But from the second he connected, he knew that it was gone. And it got out of the stadium very quickly. So we get then to, and oh, by the way, that was the top of the eighth inning, and that home run was off Yu Darvish. So Yu Darvish comes in as a relief pitcher in this one. And over the course of the last couple innings, what you had was Yu Darvish up in the bullpen. Then Ohtani would join him and would warm up, only to turn around and run back to the Japanese dugout because he had to hit. And then he went back out to the bullpen to warm up again. I'm telling you, enigma. You don't see this with anyone else in Major League Baseball. So here he comes in the ninth inning to protect what is a one-run advantage for Japan. Jeff McNeil works a walk off Ohtani, and he didn't like that ball four. He kind of felt like it should have been strike three, but Jeff McNeil works a walk. He gets Mookie Betts to ground into a double play. Shay, what are you doing? Just shaking his head like, oh, such a disappointment.
Rough double play.
It's a rough double play. Yeah, there are a couple of double plays that wiped out Team USA threats. So here we go. couldn't have asked for a better final at bat. Now, bases were empty, but a deep shot by Mike Trout would have tied the game. Top of the ninth, two out for Trout. Six pitches in total. Trout works a full count against Ohtani.
We've reached the limit. 3-2, two outs, top nine. U.S. down a run. Ohtani set. Trout ready. The 3-2 pitch. Trout swings and misses, and Japan wins the 2023 WBC. Ohtani fires his helmet towards the dugout. He's mobbed on the mound by his teammates, and Japan goes undefeated in winning the championship tonight, 3-2.
Full count. Ohtani ka, Trout ka.
I swear he said cowabunga there at the end. I did hear WBC. That was awesome. But again, listen to what it sounds like behind that Japanese call. You would think this was for a world championship in Major League Baseball, the World Series, Game 7. Nah. This was March. It was mid-March. And yet, the Team Japan celebrates like it's their greatest accomplishment ever. And I don't mind it. I was there for it. I loved the atmosphere, the electricity, the buzz, and how cool to see a pair of teammates who are both former MVPs facing each other in that final at bat. Four of those pitches, six pitch at bat, four of them over 100 miles per hour as Ohtani gets the save. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Now, Lars Nubar, at least for the American broadcast on TV and radio, has been the unofficial spokesperson for Team Japan because of his ease with speaking English, of course. In fact, he doesn't speak Japanese and half the time just was nodding and smiling when the Japanese were doing their pregame speech. But he loves to talk about his Samurai Japan teammate.
You knew it was going to. As soon as you saw Trout up there hitting third, the script was written, man. It was already written, and that's how it was going to be. It was Trout versus Ohtani, 3-2 count, two outs, ninth inning. Unbelievable, man.
No scripts. There were no scripts here. Stop spreading rumors, Lars Nubar. After the game, Mike Trout stood in front of a bunch of reporters and talked about that battle with Ohtani.
He won round one. No, it's, you can't take anything away from it. Just to be able to come out of the bullpen, as a starter, and it's showtime. So it's hats off to them guys over there. It was a tough night for us, but we'll be back.
A tough night for us, but we will be back. Yeah, they were fired up too. The spirit, the energy. I think the exultation really told the story, not to mention how excited the fans were to be involved in something like this. And Rob Manfred has indicated that he wants more of the MLB stars to take part in the World Baseball Classic, although it certainly seemed like Team USA was loaded. Not sure how he could work more stars onto the team. I suppose we could put an Aaron Judge there. I'm trying to think who else would you really want to see, Jay, in the World Baseball Classic? More pitchers, maybe?
Yeah, I'd put like Max Scherzer in there. It would be cool. And Clayton Kershaw, I don't know, something like along those lines would
Justin
be cool.
Justin Verlander. We don't need two Mets pitchers.
No, nope. We don't, considering one Mets pitcher who was in there is out for the season. So
Edwin Diaz gone for the season. Well, lightning strike twice. Shohei Ohtani, he can't speak English. He prefers not to in interviews. I understand that. But with an interpreter, he offered this pitch-by-pitch breakdown of that final at-bat against Mike Trout.
So first pitch, slider. The way he took my slider, I felt like he was anticipating something soft, so that's why I started attacking with my fastball.
That's why he went back to the fastball. And then you get the 3-2, I thought you were going to reach back and throw one 100 miles an hour, and you threw a slider.
それについてもう一球100マイル取るかなと思ってたんですけど、スライダーでしたね。
それがバッテリーの意図として完璧な配球だったと思うので、なおかつ最後投げたボールもコースも曲がりも完璧だったんじゃないかなと思います。
Yeah, I felt like that was exactly according to the game plan with me and Nakamura, the catcher, and I made that pitch right in the corner. It was the best pitch I made.
Go ahead, Pedro.
Well, basically, he was doing what he was doing basically because he knew Mike or because that was going to be his approach against Mike.
トラウト選手をよく知ってるからこそのああいう配球だったんでしょうか、それとももう自分のベストの球を投げたっていう、でしょうか。まあどちらもありますね。やっぱり僕らエンジェルスの選手たちが一番彼の凄さっていうのを身近で見て感じてると思うので、僕自身ちゃんと自分のベストを超えるような球を投げないと抑えれないなとは思ってました。
It's a little bit of both. I mean, playing with Trout for a long time, I know I probably know the best, how great he is, how much of a great baseball player he is, so I need to give my 120% to get him out.
How fascinating that is. And you hear Harold Reynolds with Pedro Martinez on the MLB Network stage or desk, and then you hear the responses of Ohtani through the interpreter. But yeah, the fact that they're teammates, he felt like he knows what Mike Trout would fall for, and that he thought that that slider was nasty. I said it was wicked earlier. Jay said it was nasty. He had thrown four fastballs that were over 100 miles per hour, and then slider at the beginning, and gets him on a whiff with a slider, a wicked slider at the end. And he says that was the best pitch that he threw. That's super cool. Mark DeRosa, the manager of Team USA, definitely enjoyed the experience himself and didn't want to focus on the negative or the loss. But man, how can you not rave about Ohtani over the course of the last couple weeks and certainly last night?
You know what blows me away on the stage is the fact that he seems to like no moment's too big for him. I mean, he did not seem like rattled by walking Jeff McNeil on a close pitch down. Not rattled that, like you said, three MVPs were coming up to bat. Like you said, I've analyzed him for years since he's come over here. What he's doing in the game is what probably 90% of the guys in that clubhouse did in Little League or in youth tournaments, and he's able to pull it off on the biggest stages. He is he's a unicorn to the sport. I don't, you know, I think other guys will try it, but I don't think they're going to do it to his level.
Mark DeRosa uses the word unicorn. I use the word enigma. In this case, they are interchangeable. So Ohtani is my answer. Jay swears to me he's got a great answer. So we'll get that before the end of the show. Already seeing your responses. Who or what are the enigmas in sports? On Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I get that the WBC isn't for everyone. I actually really enjoyed it, and I don't mind it being in March. We're not going to have that kind of buzz in March for anything else on the baseball diamond. And here we are now, just 8 days away from all 30 teams launching into their seasons. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
What's up, everybody? Nick Costos here. College basketball is about to get crazy, and BetQL makes it easier than ever to cash your bets. BetQL analyzes every single tournament matchup so you can succeed with your bracket pools and individual game bets. Which teams will pull off an upset? Who's going to cover the spread? BetQL handles all the hard work so you can win more consistently. Head to BetQL.com today to start your 3-day free trial. That's BetQL.com. BetQL.com today to start your 3-day free trial.
The Boys from Biloxi is John Grisham's latest number one New York Times bestseller. In this epic novel of fathers and sons, loyalty and revenge, Grisham's unforgettable characters fight the good fight. The Boys from Biloxi is in stores now from Doubleday.
All right, it's on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Gave it to Watanabe. His pass stolen by who? Levert and to Mitchell. Pow! With the right hand. Donovan Mitchell with a thunderous dunk. And the Cavaliers are up 18.
I looked at Vert, you know, and he just kept backing up. And, you know, I just felt good enough to try and get up there and then dunk it. And figured I'd just use my body and then just finish. And it worked out.
It was crazy.
He said he'd done that before to him, so, I mean, I guess he had a flashback.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
If you haven't seen the Donovan Mitchell dunk in which his teammate, Caris LeVert, just kind of backs off and there you go, man. The world is your oyster. He jams it down. The reaction from the benches is always one of my favorite parts of a monster dunk like that. Maybe we can retweet it. From Cavs Radio, that's the call. Donovan Mitchell, the star of the show from up close, rocking the rim, but also clanging down some threes from deep. And the Cavaliers are able to best the Nets, who've now dropped four in a row, but are still part of that Eastern Conference playoff picture. So about 8-9 games to go in the East, and the top three teams have already clinched playoff spots, but still will be jostling for position. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The Celtics have no trouble with the Sacramento Kings just a few hours ago. They wrap up a road trip 4-2, but you want to talk about an enigma. They spanked the Kings, a team that is headed for the playoffs as well, a real good team. They've been playing great this last month or so. But the Celtics on the same trip lose to the Rockets and also blow a near 20-point lead to the Utah Jazz. So to get 36 points from Jason Tatum last night, to have Robert Williams come off the bench, that was a big deal. And Jaylen Brown, he recognizes what he saw from his teammates.
That looked like the team I recognized. We came out, we played 48 minutes, we didn't take our foot off the gas. We took care of business, ended the road trip well, get back home and take care of business again. You know, we dropped a couple games on this trip that we probably shouldn't have. You know, the Sacramento Kings been playing good basketball, so we wanted to come in here and make a little bit of a statement.
On NBC Sports Boston, Jaylen Brown talking about the Celtics getting back to who they are and protecting fourth quarter leads, which has been a problem. They've had some pretty enigmatic fourth quarter collapses, but not last night. I had a chance to catch up with Sean Grandy. So he was still in Sacramento, presumably is back in Boston or getting pretty darn close now. But I had a chance to catch up with him and mention these fourth quarter collapses didn't happen in Sacramento, but highs and lows on this road trip. I asked him how he would describe the way the Celtics are playing right now.
Well, it's up and down, like you just said. You can't overreact or be, what's the new term everybody using? The kids use prisoner of the moment, right? But you're coming off a game in which I really thought this was teed up for the Celtics to play well. You're catching the Kings on a back-to-back. When the Celtics lose some of these leads, and they lost a big lead, they did lose some of them that were really ugly. But when you lose the game in Cleveland, for example, and you lose the one in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, and you lose the one in Utah, that's the second night of a back-to-back on the road, playing at altitude at Utah, playing without a lot of your starters, playing without. So those are games that happen in the regular season. And for some reason, there's a psychological thing that says being up by 15 and losing by one is somehow worse than being down by 15 and then coming back and losing by one, when it's all the same thing at the end. And when you get to the playoffs and you have Al Horford and Jason Tatum, all these guys have been going hard and not playing back to back. So they are, you're not going to have those in the playoffs. And this team has been there before and had the long run last year. And if we step back, as much as it feels like it's the reverse of last year where they were dominant late and really struggled early, and this is the reverse of that, we've seen teams that have had long playoff runs have really good starts, and then it's like, okay, when do the playoffs start? So I think there's an element of that too. And if I think that the outliers are going to be those leads that they lost in the back-to-back games. I think Celtics are going to finish pretty strong here. The interesting thing is there's not enough time, I think, to get back to the one seed. So you're looking at arguably the three best teams in the NBA right now are all in the East. So a really good team is going home in the second round.
And the top three have all clinched, right? The Bucks, the Celtics, and the Sixers are all into the playoffs. That we know, but it's real tight there between the Celtics and the Sixers. If you're saying that that's the case and these are isolated incidents, even as dramatic as they were, does that mean nobody around the team is worried about what's happened in the fourth quarter at times?
Oh, I think people are absolutely worried about the fourth quarter and that the efficiency drops off and that the turnovers go way up in the fourth quarter. It's a significant problem. The question is, when you've been a dominant team, the Celtics for the first third of the season were not just the best team in the league. They were the best team by a wide margin.
Right.
And I think we have to retrain ourselves, Amy, from looking at the season the way we used to, that the 82-game season would tell us everything we wanted to know. And the team with the best scoring differential was the team that was going to go on to win the championship. Because this is, whether we like it or not, the reality is this is the load management era. And so the regular season doesn't offer us as many comfortable predictions as it has in years past. And let's go all the way back, and I mean all the way back to 2022. Golden State was not good down the stretch last year. They were basically a 500 team. Celtics, for example, went to San Francisco and crushed them late in the regular season last year. And they had a game in which I've heard a lot of people say, look at some of the games the Celtics lost, and they'll go, oh, championship teams don't lose games like that. Well, I seem to remember Golden State losing by about 80 to Memphis in the playoffs last year. And I know that they won the championship because I was there. I called it, and I saw them win. So I saw a team that lost by 50, whatever, in the second round of the game, win the championship on the Celtics floor in June. So we may not like the load management era, but, again, we have to be a little more conservative in using examples from the regular season, specific examples saying, oh, teams that do this don't win the championship, because all three of the teams at the top of the East at times this year have had some real stakers. They've had some real bad games, but here we are. And again, I don't think you can argue it. They may argue it in Denver or in Memphis or maybe even in Sacramento, but the three best teams are all in the East.
We've talked about the roller coaster that the Celtics have been on as a team, kind of up and down a little bit. Jason Tatum himself has been on that same trajectory. Now, he did have 36 points tonight. He's still a superstar. But again, how would you describe the season that he's had coming off of that NBA Finals trip?
I thought he was the MVP for the first third of the year. Since then, not so much. You know, he's had certain games, and tonight, you know, the game in Sacramento was certainly one of them that made you think, like, okay, he's snapping out of it. Since the All-Star break has been probably the longest stretch of Jason Tatum not looking like Jason Tatum in a couple of years. And the on-off numbers, he is a plus-minus net rating monster and has been for the first day he walked into the league. And this three-week stretch, it's not a two-game stretch anymore. It's, you know, been 13 games going into tonight since the All-Star break, and the Celtics actually have been better with him off the floor. And that never, ever, ever happened. So he has played a ton of minutes. He leads the league in scoring in terms of total points, which is all people really should be. I'm on a big campaign to get that, get all of our mindsets changed from averages, particularly in the load management era. It's never been more important to look at totals. You know, Sabonis leads the league in total rebounds. Jason Tatum leads the league in total points. I'd rather have total points, you know, than someone who plays half the games and averages another point or two a game. And I know this because I know, Amy, that Aaron Judge did not lead Major League Baseball with .41 home runs per game last year. Like, it should be totals, not averages. But the big total for Jason Tatum is minutes. He's played the fourth most minutes in the NBA. And you keep trying to get him rest and get him rest here. But, you know, he's playing 38, 39 minutes a night with all these games being close. And that'll wear on you, too. So it's difficult to sustain a year he has had. It's difficult to sustain a 21-5 start the same way it's difficult to sustain when you jump out to a big lead, particularly in this NBA. When you go up by 20, the next progression, everybody watches these games, you don't go up by 30. The lead gets cut to 12. That's how it happens. So, again, for the Celtics, like everybody else that's competing for a championship, is this group healthy when the playoffs start? And as difficult as this stretch of the schedule has been, what everybody forgets is you get to April, the schedule is light anyway. Celtics mostly have home games. And then what nobody has factored in yet in the new NBA is that the top 12 teams in the playoffs are getting a week off because of the play-in tournament. So you're getting an extra, you know, week. Not to mention, there's no back-to-backs. You have a first round stretched out to 16 days and a week off beforehand. The Celtics last year swept Brooklyn in the first round. They played, I think, four games over 16, 17 days.
Sean Grandy, longtime radio voice of the Boston Celtics, though also moonlighting on TV, games carried on NBC Sports Boston. And he told me that he is radio only the rest of the way, and I've missed him. I usually follow Celtics games on Sirius XM from my house, and so it'll be good to hear his voice again. But also, fourth quarter woes have plagued the Celtics at times, and they are likely to miss out on that top seed. Looks like the Milwaukee Bucks will protect it, or should protect it. So the playoffs are coming. They are on the horizon. Great answers, by the way. Who or what are the enigmas in sports? We'll get to those before the top of the hour. Jay tells me he's got an answer too. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, my Twitter, and then our Facebook page.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. SGA drives left, bends off, step back 18-footer, short. George with a good rebound. Oh, George just goes down hard. A foul's going to be called. George just got undercut, and he's in pain. Dort got into his landing space, and this is the last thing the Clippers were looking for.
Leonard caught at by Dort. 7 seconds. Retreats well beyond the arc. 5 seconds. Leonard gets another screen from Morris. Slashes right. Spins. 1 second. Grinds left. Pump fakes and fires. Didn't get off in time. The Thunder win. Lou Dort locks up. Kawhi Leonard. Thunder winning in Los Angeles. 101-100. Oh, Lou brings the Dortcher chamber to the fray. And straight jackets Kawhi Leonard mano a mano, preserving a Thunder gutty 101-100 victory over the Clippers. Wow.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The double whammy for the Clippers last night in L.A. They lose at the buzzer. Kawhi Leonard misfires on the game, what would have been the game-winning shot. You hear that call on Thunder radio. But before that, about 4.5 minutes left in this fourth quarter, Paul George goes down in a heap on the court. He collided with Lou Dort. It was an accident. There was nothing dirty or intentional about it, but hit his leg. And it appears as though George was grasping at his knee. Not only could he not put any weight on it, had to be helped off the court, but I saw in the tunnel, as they got past the court and beyond the fans, they actually picked him up and carried him the rest of the way to the locker room. So that is not good news. Really scary, as you can imagine. Ty Lue, short on details.
I saw it, but I mean, they still being reevaluated right now. So, but I did see it. I didn't even know it looked like that until Dante just showed me, so I didn't even know.
Did you get to talk to him at all? See,
no, I haven't seen him.
Kawhi Leonard later said that he thought George had hit his head or his face or something like that, but instead it was very clearly a knee injury. So this is scary as we're talking about the Clippers, who, you want to use the word enigma, that's a perfect example. Sometimes they are world beaters. Sometimes they're not. I suppose that could apply to most of the Western Conference. But with their situation right now being one of where they're in the fifth spot in the West, but only a game and a half out of that 7-10 tournament. In fact, the Oklahoma City Thunder are now a game and a half behind them. Again, an enigma. The entire West, really. But the Clippers don't have much of a margin for error now with 8-9 games to go for the rest of the regular season. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I've been talking about the NBA, the Sacramento Kings, the Boston Celtics last night. We got that Donovan Mitchell dunk in there as well as the Paul George news. What was the other piece that we're going to do, Jay, that was basketball? No, was it? Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. It's the Hump Show, and I'm holding it together. I think I've been doing pretty well not getting scatterbrained, although Jay may have a different perspective. But I feel like I've stayed on point for most of the show tonight. Yes, is another basketball storyline topic, which Ja Morant's return, supposed to be playing for the Grizzlies tonight, spoke to the reporters, the glut of reporters that were there for his first practice with the Grizzlies yesterday. And he was asked about the counseling in these last couple of weeks away from the team.
It's been good. Obviously, you know, a lot of learning. Pretty much, you know, that. Honestly, you know, took that time to, you know, better myself, you know, get in a, you know, better space mentally.
Not sure exactly how the Grizzlies coaching staff will handle his return. Apparently, he told them that he'd be happy to come off the bench because they're going to gradually increase his minutes. He's been away and wasn't able to work out for over a week and a half, and they want to be careful. They don't want anything to happen to him. But Morant did say he's a little uncomfortable with the idea how fans could respond to him as he returns from an 8-game suspension. He deactivated his social media for a while, though he has indicated that those accounts on Insta and Twitter are active again. He says he is going to refrain, though, from putting his whole life out there on social the way that he has. And it was the Instagram live video from inside a club in Denver in which he appeared really intoxicated and was waving a gun around that he swears wasn't his. There were no charges that were pressed, but Adam Silver looked at the tape, determined, and actually, I believe he interviewed Ja as well. They talked to Ja, determined that he was drunk and while Morant went away for counseling, he went away for a little help. He says it was not for alcohol. Instead, it was about dealing with stress and anxiety and some of these pressure situations. That makes sense to me. He's 23 years old, and he's been thrust into the spotlight, not that different than many superstars who enter a league where instantly the spotlight is white hot because of where they were drafted or their potential. And he has lived up to that potential on the basketball court. But it's been a series of poor choices and bad decisions. So I hope these 2 weeks were a reset, were a pause, maybe an indication to him, maybe a gut check, realizing how precarious his position and how quickly all of this could go away if he doesn't make better decisions. And the team reportedly is planning on changing some of its travel arrangements. I'd even heard the city Miami. They don't want Ja Morant to be out. They don't want him to have the opportunity to be on South Beach and get into more trouble or make poor decisions. But you can only protect him for so long. I don't mind the guidance there. He is your superstar. You've made a major investment in him. I believe that a few more guardrails would be good for Ja, but they can't do that forever. You're talking about a grown man. And then you're talking about a roster full of guys who are older than him and don't want to be limited or told what to do or feel like they're grouped in with these team changes that are serving more as a babysitting type of a situation for Ja. Now he's going to have to do this on his own. So good for him that he went to counseling and he said that it was his decision. And also he's made some changes over the last couple of weeks.
Just being, you know, more responsible, you know, more smarter. It's pretty much it for me. Obviously, you know, I made mistakes in the past that, you know, caused a lot of, you know, negative attention, not only to me, but, you know, my family as well, you know, my team, you know, the organization, and I'm completely sorry for that. So, you know, my job now is, like I said, to, you know, be, you know, more responsible, more smarter, and, you know, don't cause any of that no more.
I hope that he can find some solace, some peace, but also find some focus, some health, some mental health on the basketball court. Very often when we apply ourselves to what we were born to do, what we were created to do, in his case, at this stage in his life, it's basketball. He is damn good at it. I'm hoping that he finds that peace, that solace. I know that I do in a radio studio, regardless of what hell is breaking loose around us. And trust me, it happens a lot. Or sitting at my piano. Those gifts and talents and abilities, when we use them as humans, often it brings us to a place where we can focus and we find some mental health there. And I hope that that is the case with Ja. He does indicate basketball is his priority, that he wants to be a healthy, contributing member of the Grizzlies, and certainly understands that they've got a major opportunity now sitting in that 2 seed in the West. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Want to get to some of your Enigma responses, but really quickly, if you hadn't heard this, I want to make sure we get to it before the end of the show. Austin Eckler speaking out about the Los Angeles Chargers, and it would be a very poor decision by the Chargers, in my opinion, to let him go. But he tells Chris Long on the Green Light, it's the Green Light podcast, that right now, the Chargers have indicated to him that he's got a salary and that's where it stands. I hope he gets a new deal. I hope that the Chargers see the light, because if they lose him, they lose a major piece of versatility, but also a guy who can really offer some protection for Justin Herbert, because defenses have to game plan for him.
I'm so underpaid right now, yeah, as far as my contract and what I contribute to the team. It's like I am relentlessly pursuing this. Like, yeah. I want to get something long-term done. I want a team that wants me long-term.
Yeah.
Right? Because, look, I'm at the peak of my game, right? Like, yeah. I'm going to score you another 20 touchdowns. As long as I'm healthy, I'm going to score you 20 touchdowns. I'm going to have, you know, another 1,600 all-purpose yards.
Yeah.
Right? I'm getting half my value of what I could be getting.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like I am relentlessly pursuing someone who wants me.
And if that's not the Chargers, that's why he and his team asked for permission to seek a trade. They asked for permission to find a taker. But at this point, there are a few running backs that have changed teams. We know Ezekiel Elliott is out there too. How much would you pay for a 27-year-old Austin Eckler? Definitely in the prime of his career, except the track record for running backs is that you want to get rid of them. And I know that sounds very, it sounds very flippant of me. You want to move on from running backs before they start to decline. That's always the trend in the NFL. But he's had back-to-back seasons in which he's been over 900 yards rushing. And he's led the NFL in total touchdowns the last 2 years, even hitting 20 in the 21 season. That's a lot of numbers. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Again, really interesting stuff on the Greenlight podcast with Austin Eckler. Says he holds no grudges against the Chargers, but is woefully underpaid and is not going to let this go. So who are the enigmas in sports? Producer Jay, what do you think before I read some of the other answers on social?
I got one that we haven't heard yet, which I think would be a common one that we should see there. That's Connor McDavid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So talented, but his big mouth really ran contrary to his talent and got him into so much trouble.
Oh, not McGregor. McDavid.
Oh, McDavid. Oh, I'm
McGregor
sorry.
Too, but yeah.
I heard Connor and my brain went right
both,
to McGregor.
Both apply. Both
so
apply.
Why McDavid?
Oh, just that he's just leaps and bounds ahead of anyone in the NHL right now. And it's just crazy how he's on that different level, which no one seems to be able to get to except for him.
Is it mysterious?
It's an enigma. And another one I got, which I don't think we'll hear. How about Nelson Cruz?
Huh.
Guy's 42 years old. He's about to be 43 in mm-hmm. July. He still plays. He's on the Padres right now. Hits about 30 home runs, 25 home runs, 80 RBIs every single year. He's got like 460 career homers right now. He gets no love, but he's an enigma. The guy just plays every single year and produces.
I like it. I like those two. I added Conor McGregor unwittingly to the list. Some of your responses on Twitter, A-Law Radio, Caitlin Clark. She's the sharpshooter, the incredible player for Iowa women's basketball. Other ones here on Twitter, the Alabama Crimson Tide not producing a winning QB. Well, what's Bryce Young? Wait, I'm confused. What was Mac Jones? Stop it. I don't want to hear it. On our Facebook page, a bunch of you have gone with Kyrie Irving. Some of you have gone with Aaron Rodgers. It's been pretty funny to see some of your answers like Jerry Jones or Cam Newton. Enigma, mysterious, makes no sense. Dennis Rodman, Mike Trout. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.